back to the Small Business Secret Weapon Hour.
And welcome back to the Small Business Secret Weapon Hour. I am Mark Luderman, and again, here with the affable Jim Durfee. And we are very excited to have Jim, two great guests today, Jim Timmerman and Jason Ballou, partners with the law firm of TBH&E. And this is a really interesting law firm because it's a new law firm. And essentially, these were four guys that came together from big firm talent, so to speak. And they've created a firm that is very much in line with small business mentality. In other words, you don't get those huge rates that you find when you go and you hire these law firms, you know, to help you. And the talent's incredible at really incredible rates. And so I was so excited to bring them on. And in addition to that, they're going to talk about their tips on how business owners can avoid unwanted lawsuits and the best practices to save your case and your assets. So, gentlemen, welcome to Jim and Jason. And thank you for being here today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
How'd you guys get started, by the way? What caused you to leave, I'll assume, some pretty good size firms and get out of that? Was it a rat race, or were you just ready to do something new and different?
Well, a rat race would be one way to describe it, I guess. We've had this discussion amongst ourselves a few times, and I guess the way I describe it is sort of fate and good fortune. So we all sort of had the same mentality. That we were looking for something new, and we had been approached by a recruiter that was looking to bring some people in-house with a company that was looking to grow a large legal force. And so we thought that this might be the perfect opportunity for us to go out and sort of do things a new way and set up a captive law firm for this company. Interestingly, though, as soon as we got there, management changed, and their views of prioritizing the way that we wanted to do things changed. And we decided, well, we were set up to do it. Let's go out and do what we wanted to do. And so the four of us decided to go out and set up our own firm and to really approach the market.
Were
in
you
a
all
unique
working
way.
For the same firm at that time, or were you coming from different places?
We all came from large firms and were recruited away from those large firms to this company to set up the captive firm. And it was kind of serendipitous, where almost a blessing in disguise of sorts. When we were faced with this prospect of opening up our own firm privately. We're about 2.5-3 months in, and we couldn't be happier.
And I finally, when I met these guys, was like, finally. Because dealing with small business owners on a daily basis and on a weekly basis, hundreds of them, one of the biggest complaints is that, you know, they go and hire an attorney, you know, a law firm, and the next thing they know, they've rung up $10,000 of legal fees. And so what does that do to you as an owner? It keeps you from calling your attorney and, you know, deferring a decision that is very, very important. And so now we have these four, you know, bright guys coming together from big firms and at much lower billing rates.
It sounds like you get the big firm attention, the big firm knowledge, but you get personal attention, even though you have the big firm knowledge.
Yeah, and that's it. And as you guys are well aware, 2008 changed everything. When the economy tanked essentially worldwide, businesses, both large and small, started taking a look at everything about their business. And there's really nothing that irks small business owners in particular more than legal expenses that they feel are far too high. And fortunately, in this day and age, technology really allows attorneys and many other different professionals to essentially provide the same service that you would get from a large firm, but with much less overhead.
But that doesn't mean that these big firms have reduced their rates to be conducive with what you've just said.
Right. They're stuck. They're stuck in their model, and that's essentially the problem.
Because they've got these huge, huge overhead with these, gigantic space You know, well,
the lease costs are probably the biggest cost they have, right? That's the big overhead.
One of the things that's changed. One of the things that's changed too is the technology has changed so much. The old model used to be, especially for the larger firms, that you needed to have an office in each county where there was a courthouse. You needed to have attorneys to staff all those offices, and you needed to have all the support staff to then support the attorneys. And each of those things costs money. And so the overhead expenses for the larger firms is essentially a fixed number that you can't really go back and change. And so when the businesses come out and start to say to their attorneys, look, we may love the work that you're doing, but we can't afford you anymore. Well, the firms, most of the firms are stuck. They can't come back and reduce the rate because their fixed costs are such that there's just no way to do it and stay in business. And so what we've been excited about is the opportunity to really go out and avoid the pitfall that everybody else is now stuck with that really is dating all the way back to when the economy tanked in 2008.
Let's get to, because I know our listeners are excited about this, tips for business owners to avoid unwanted lawsuits and best practices to save your case and your assets. I'm going to turn it over to you guys. I don't even know. We haven't talked about it, what they are. So I'm excited to listen and take notes here. So Jason and Jim, hit us.
Well, thanks, Mark. And initially, before we even talk about what happens when you get sued, a lot of times business owners need to be thinking down the road when they even form the corporation initially. As you know, there's different types of business entities that you can form. So when you're even contemplating starting a business, you need to think about what type of business do I want to form? And in Maryland, one of the popular business entities that you can form is called an LLC or a limited liability company, as many of your listeners I'm sure already know. Well, the name itself implies its benefits in that you're limiting the liability of the members who are actually forming the LLC. And there's different rules and regulations for that. But essentially, if the company gets sued down the road, what you're doing is protecting your personal property, your house that you own with your wife, your car, your boat, whatever. So there are different advantages to look into when actually forming a company. In addition, I like to say there's kind of a trinity of important people when you're forming a company, and that is your attorney, your counsel, who should be advising you and your partners on different aspects of the business you're going into. Your accountant is also obviously very important for tax reasons, like we've been discussing earlier today, and also an insurance broker. A lot of businesses, especially small businesses, get into trouble when they're not properly insured, and your attorney and your insurance broker can play a crucial role and that whole process. For example, we do a lot of work with construction companies or contractors. During the process, it's very crucial for those types of businesses to make sure they're properly insured, and in the legal sense, to make sure that all the contracts that are developed have the appropriate clauses that help protect the company down the road should a claim arise. For example, indemnification clauses are crucial in contracts. And unfortunately, a lot of people rely on their uncle or their grandfather's company's form that he used 20 years ago, or, you know, a lot of these online Google a contract and hope that that's good. You know, that might help you some, but it's really not the level of detail you need to look into if you want to protect your company appropriately.
You know, I've wondered that. How many people or how many small businesses are going to easylegalforms.com? I'll make that one up, I think. But, you know, going to Easy Legal and think they can start a business from that.
I mean, a lot. You put a percentage? That's why there's
Are you saying over 50% are doing that?
I don't know the numbers, but I certainly hear the ads, and
they must be doing something right because they're plentiful out there. But getting back to what you were saying about contractors, yeah, I agree with you. Liquidated damages is another big one that really can affect contractors as well. So you're right on target. You know, having everything set up, having the right people, surrounding yourself with the right people.
Right. And just one more quick comment about the insurance aspect of it and what various businesses can do to help protect themselves down the road is. For contractors, even we do a lot of work with the hospitality and entertainment industry. When you contract with third parties to do different things like catering, security, things of that nature, it's important to not only have the indemnification clauses, but you can also be sure that the contracts have you added as an additional insured.
Let's repeat that again. This is a biggie. This is a biggie. So let's hit the.
A lot of times when you contract with a third party, you control the terms of that contract. And what you can do, especially we see it a lot in construction, it's required that the subcontractor name you as an additional insured on their policy. That means if a claim comes and it's the responsibility of the subcontractor who you've hired, yet you get named in the lawsuit or the claim, you simply make a claim with the insurance company that you're named as an additional insured for. And so that's why a company's attorney and insurance broker becoming very important in that whole equation.
When you get a certificate of insurance, correct me if I'm wrong, there's two. You can be named as loss payee or additional insured. Correct.
Correct.
Can you talk a little bit about the difference? What's the difference there?
Well, the main thing is what you want to be is an additional insured.
Correct.
That's the maximum level of protection, because again, it kind of cuts through a lot of the. Red tape as far as if a claim gets filed. It's supposed to be as simple as it makes it look on these Geico-type commercials where you call the agent and you make your claim. Obviously, if it's a more serious construction-type accident or something involving a serious injury, it's a little more involved, but the principle is the same. I'm named as an additional insured by virtue of this contract that I've negotiated with the subcontractor. You have the duty to not only provide a defense for me, but indemnify me because of this claim. So business owners should really pay attention to those things when forming.
And we're not only talking about construction industry. This goes to just about any industry. So let's say that you're a restaurant and you decide to get into carryout and you go ahead and hire a third party, a company, to do the driving for you. There's some liability there if you're not named as an additional insured.
Well, absolutely. And that's a great point, Mark, because, for example, again, when dealing with our hospitality and entertainment clients, a lot of them are restaurants, bars, nightclubs, music venues, that type of thing. Well, one of the more common claims that we see over time are when there's disputes or fights between patron on patron, and occasionally there's a situation where a bouncer or security guard gets into it or removes somebody from the premises, and a claim or a lawsuit arises from that. Well, a smart business owner in that scenario should have hired the security as a third-party vendor. And in that whole process, the contracts and the insurance should name the main entity as an additional insured. It's a level of protection. It's a level of risk management.
It's one of the reasons I was asking about the forms, because I think these are the kind of questions that you don't necessarily know to answer without having someone like Jason or Jim to go to. And Jim, I think, you know, some of the things you were saying earlier about how do you mitigate risk, how do you eliminate risk, I mean, you've got to be able to sit down and hear the full story from someone.
Yeah, you really do need to have a better understanding of not only the person that you're dealing with, but the expectations that they have with the relationship and where they're trying to take their business down the road. And we've also, you know, once your business is set up, as Jason had described, and some of these, there are some general things that a business can certainly do to try to keep itself from facing an unwanted lawsuit. The first thing you need to recognize, though, is that each business is going to be unique, and you need to sort of understand the risks that your particular business is going to face. So there's nothing that's a one-size-fits-all. And there certainly aren't any guarantees that even if you put whatever best practices are in place that you're not going to get sued, because I think everybody knows that there's always somebody out there that's willing to file a claim. But following up on where you guys started this morning, you know, the goal is to make it easy for your customers to do business with you. If you're going to be providing a service, as many of small business owners are, then you want to do a good job and be professional. And you need to do what you've promised that you're going to do for your customer. And you need to communicate with your customers. It shouldn't come as any surprise to somebody that most lawsuits are going to arise from simple misunderstandings. So you want to try to avoid any misunderstandings, document what you've agreed to do with people, have appropriate agreements that are in writing. The other thing that a business owner needs to do is you should have a general understanding of what the law is that relates to your business. And in this sense, you can sit down and talk with your accountants and your legal professionals to make sure that you have at least a general understanding of all the laws, the regulations that are going to apply. In Maryland, there certainly are hundreds and thousands of regulations and laws that are going to be applicable. Utilize an employee handbook. This is a little bit of a topic that there's a disagreement among a number of business owners about. My personal belief is that it's a good practice for businesses of just about any size to have some type of employee policy and an employee handbook.
What's the disagreement? Because the bottom line is you should have an employee handbook.
Well, it's funny that you say that because when you do talk to some people, the view is, well, if I have an employee handbook, I'm sort of stuck with what's in the handbook. Or
that's not true. I mean, it can be modified. It can be updated as long as you're communicating that to your employees.
You're exactly right. The problem that most businesses run into, though, is they have an employee handbook. They've got policies that they set down at some point in time, and they haven't reviewed those policies. They haven't kept the policies up to date. Or even worse for them, they're not paying attention to their own policies. So they have a problem. They decide that it's time they've got an employee that they need to let go, or they have some type of a social media issue. They don't look at their own policy to decide what they have told their employees that they're going to do.
You brought up a great point, social media. That in and of itself is a huge issue. I'll tell you another huge issue that needs to be addressed, and that is with your employees driving now and texting and being on the phone. And having those spelled out that the company does not tolerate that, and that is to be avoided 100%, so that you can avoid any potential liability. Because, as you know, there have been some the lawsuits where if somebody is in a car accident and they're on employee if they're on company time, who does the person who got hit go after?
Wait until they legalize marijuana 100%.
Well, I think
add that one to the mix.
There certainly will be some modifications to the employee handbooks for drug policies that are going to be coming with the new laws.
Do you work on employee handbooks? I mean, do you get involved with those?
Oh, we do, and it is one of those things that my wife is actually a pediatrician, and I hear her tell the patients all the time once a year. You need to go down and you'd have to check your smoke detectors and check the batteries. Well, I tell employers the same thing. You need to be checking your employment handbooks and your policies at least once a year. And it isn't a tough thing to do. You just need to update possibly one or two policies that may have changed with something that the federal government or the local governments have done. But the problem, as you said, you run into these issues and nobody even recognizes that the law has changed. And so now you've got a potential liability on hand because your employment policy isn't up to date. And you haven't followed it.
Going back to what you're saying about social media, Mark, I'm thinking also that a lot of employees are better educated, more informed. And if the employer is not, there's a lot of risk from lawsuits that direction as well. I mean, there's a lot more risk now than there ever has been anyway. But I think a lot of it is because people are educated as to what to do. So if you as an employer are not doing your due diligence, you're not educated, you're at great risk.
Yeah, it's exactly right. And with the internet, it's just the information is available to everybody. You can find it anywhere. And there's no shortage of people that are out there advertising. I mean, you can watch late night television, you listen to the radio. There's attorneys out there trying to talk to people. They may not have even had a thought that they have a claim, but they will go to talk to people. So you really do need to stay on top of these things.
Has there been a raise in lawsuits? Do you feel since 2008 in particular? I'll just use that as an example because of what's changed. Business-wise, do you think that affected anything, or is it just in more educated population, more people involved?
I haven't really detected an uptick, but I certainly haven't noticed a decrease. I think anytime people need money, you're going to have lawsuits or claims. Plus, there's kind of the proliferation of, let's be honest, shows on TV, Judge Judy, all these different shows where... And usually those shows have commercials with plaintiff's attorneys, and I must see five commercials a day with some sort of national plaintiff's firm who are saying if you got hurt by a cold pack or you got hurt by this or that, please call us. So there certainly hasn't been a decrease since 2008, but I think there are a decent amount of labor and employment lawsuits. I would say those have increased because as the economy has gone down and certainly hasn't rebounded from 2008, then, you know, people who get terminated for whatever reason, they need money. And whether or not they can justify a claim for wrongful termination or what have you, they certainly want their day in court a lot of times. And,
what about like non-compete legislation or, you know, non-compete agreements? Where does that fall? Are those highly enforceable? They seem to be in Maryland.
Well, non-competes are very common in just about every industry, and they're very common in the tech industry and actually just about every industry that there is. In Maryland, typically non-compete agreements will be enforced under certain conditions. A general rule of thumb is no more than 2 years or 50 miles, but a lot depends on the specific facts of the case. So that's an instance where if you're a small business and you want to try to protect the time and effort and energy you put in developing your talent, you need to be sure that your non-compete clause or contract is adequately drafted and can withstand scrutiny by the court. But ultimately, it's fact specific.
Guys, this has been a terrific segment. How does our listening audience get in touch with you?
Well, a couple of ways. We do have a website, of course. It's www.tbhelaw.com. Mm-hmm. And you can also call us at our main number, which is 410-649-4440.
Fantastic. Jim and Jason, thank you so much. This was a terrific, very educational segment, and we appreciate you coming on with us.